Hey guys, it's Lauren.
And I'm Megan, and welcome back to the Scribe Squad Pod, a Fourth Wing book club.
All right, getting into week two, chapter two of Fourth Wing.
Yes, so we have reread chapter two.
Yes.
A lot of adventure. This really doesn't cover a large timeline.
No, I think it's literally 20 minutes
yes.
of her entire time.
Yeah. So I actually listened to this one because any real Fourth Wing fan should have both the physical copy and an audiobook. And this week was a little hectic for me. So one of the things that I picked up was the cadence of this as the book continued got faster. As she's crossing and all of that, it is like picked up really quickly. And I just thought that was interesting. So 20 minutes of Violet's life.
Yes.
But...
And I thought it was interesting that Rebecca Yarros took an entire chapter just about the parapet.
So I want to bring that back up at the end because I think that there is some, she used a, not when it, the beginning mirrors the end in a very specific situation, and I'll bring it up at the end. So not to ruin the flow of everything, but there's this very specific moment where you can tell Violet has changed and I'm going to point it out to you. I'm very excited about it.
Nice. I think I also wanted to mention to everybody too, is at the beginning of each chapter, there's a little blurb, just of some kind of correspondence. Again, going back to the scribes, there's always a scribe correspondence at the beginning of each chapter. And I think some people would normally just skip over reading that because you're like, I don't have to read it. But it's very important to read those things because they have some kind of effect, maybe in that chapter or just in the future. They're always very important to read.
So I know you read it last time. Do you want to get it for us again this time? And we'll make sure we include it. Also, while she's pulling that up, I do want to say thank you guys so much for your patience as we are just now learning to podcast. I know we told you that. We are aware of some of things we need to cut out. We are learning to do all of the things. So I promise it's just going to get better with time. The one thing I am proud of is our quality sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like it is.
So bear with us. We'd love to hear your feedback, but so we're going to start out with the nice, what would you call this that starts each chapter? Just a communication?
Yeah, I think it's just, communication. Okay, so this one says, there's a misconception that it's kill or be killed in the writer's quadrant. Writers, as a whole, aren't out to assassinate other cadets, unless there's a shortage of dragons that year, or a cadet is a liability to their wing. Then things may get interesting. From Major Afendra's Guide to the Writer's Quadrant, unauthorized edition.
Ooh. So again, we already knew that there was going to be some, like Violet thinks people are going to be after her. So it's kind of interesting for Mira not only to have proven this, hey, you need to be worried about this, but there is now a correspondence that says, hey, they will kill people.
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with you being the daughter. Mm-hmm. They just will kill you.
They will literally kill you. So this chapter is really big, obviously, about the parapet and Violet's thoughts crossing the parapet. One thing that we are introduced to, even more so that we saw in the last chapter, was Jack Barlow.
Yes.
And we're really introduced to his character in
this
one.
So one of the things that I, before we even get to Barlow, is I know last time we said her mantra is I will not die today. Mm-hmm. And she specifically says my mantra. So I didn't realize she actually confirmed like this is my mantra, but it's the second time it pops up.
Yes.
It's changing her. I wanted to point out, we did hear that again.
Yes.
So Violet's mantra, I'm not going to die today. I am interested to see if that comes up in like the show if she, because we're seeing it is so important. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering to see that. So she's saying, I'm not going to die today.
Yes. And then, so before she even gets onto the parapet, as soon as you get up there, you have to state your name so that that writer can, again, take your name. The scribe can write it down.
Yes.
So that they can compare notes from the beginning of the parapet to the end of the parapet to get a death toll. That's what they call it. And so immediately she says, my name is Violet Soringale. And the writer looks back at her and was like, Soringale? And I thought it was interesting because the writer specifically said, I didn't know that there was a third Soringale.
And the way that her internal voice says this isn't the first time someone has has commented about this. So it obviously, again, starts putting into, you start understanding the dynamic of the, attorney, General Soren Gale and her daughter, because apparently she's almost like not proud of her.
Yeah. And I feel like Violet internally feels like she can't live up to the Soren Gale name.
And I think that fragility is right now the only aspect where you really understand of why she would be not as well known. But as deep dives go on, we have some different theories about why maybe Violet is not her mom's favorite, but those will have to be in the deep dives.
Yes.
There's nothing in fact that we know of why this has occurred the way it has. So yes, yeah, so she steps up and she is almost, not embarrassed.
I think that she just isn't sure of herself in this moment. I think that she has learned to cope with the fact that she's going into the writer's quadrant, but she's still not sure of herself in this moment. She even says, she was like, I feel so sorry for whoever's wing I end up in, because I'm not only a target, but I'm weak. I'm fragile. And they try to kill off the fragile people first, and I'm just going to bring my wing down.
So I think that it's interesting. Again, the Soren Gale name came up. And the other thing that I was going to say is there's this moment where she talks about Dylan's name will never be written again.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this like really poetic thing that when people talk about death, they say you die two times, which the first time is when you physically die. And the second time is the last time your name is ever mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, this like brought that up because it's so interesting to, again, we think the pen's the most powerful weapon, and she's like, Dylan's name will never be written again. And for some reason that really hit me this time. Didn't really think about it at all the first time.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because she then describes there's another scribe on the other end who's taking roll, and that's just, they just compare them and that's who made it through.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily.
Yeah. And they talk about it in the first chapter where like your family can either collect you at the bottom of the ravine, or they will literally just bury you somewhere else, or just put a marker with your name on it and never to be thought of again. It's so sad, like
wild.
And like she said in the first chapter, 15% of people who try and cross the parapet don't make it.
Which is so interesting when you think about the parallel of unmarked, like the unknown soldiers and things like that. And so again, if you're not okay with death, this is not the series for you. It's going to continue this way. So, okay, we get to know the giggling mean girl. Oh. That's who episode one, we were talking about this nefarious kid laughing just as they're all standing up to go through this horrible struggle of getting through the parapet, and you hear this, ha, 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 ha. And we meet our boy, not our boy, but our boy.
Good old Jack Barlow.
So
love him.
He comes in.
Yeah. And he's automatically like, he is out for blood.
Yes.
From the moment that this thing starts, he is automatically not only to Violet, but he is physically taking people and shoving them off the parapet, because in his mind and a lot of people's minds, there's not that many dragons out there. Right. And so they've specifically said, like, if there's not enough dragons, then the riders are either gonna, like, we don't know what's gonna happen to the riders, but there has to be the same amount. And so he's just making his chances even better as it goes. He's like, I'm killing all these people, I don't care.
And I think it's interesting because, again, you hear this, I feel sorry for whoever gets me. You also hear this comment about like whoever's wing they're on, the weakest person on the wing. So he's also making his wing stronger, I think, in his mind by eliminating these weak players. So again, last episode, we talked about brute strength is what the writers are. This is the definition of what I think people who chose to go through this, what the idea of society puts is like, Jack is the perfect writer. He doesn't care about people's lives. He doesn't know any of these people. He wants he in quotes wants what's best for his wing.
Yeah.
Because at this point, that's what our interpretation is.
Right.
And I don't really know if we ever get clarification on that, but I do feel like that's how it's kind of starting.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing that I wanted to point out, and we can come back to Jack if we need to, but there's a really big character development for Violet in this as well. Because we know, again, Violet is a scribe. Like, that's what she was raised to do. She was trained to do so. And this again is a character development that we'll see throughout the series, is when Violet gets nervous, she recites. She recites whatever she can to just take her mind off of whatever challenge she's facing. And we see it in this chapter, and she's reciting every memory that she has from the entire continent of what she's learned throughout her years as a scribe.
Which that will lead us into our deep dive this week. So we actually are going to look at the Fourth Wing map and the Iron Flame map. So if you are interested in the information she's like spouting off to you, like the facts about, she starts talking about treaties and trades and what part's going to leave people unprotected. We're going to deep dive into that. So catch us in the next episode if you want us to go into more of that. Yes. I think we kind of left that out because there's a lot to compare with Iron Flame and Fourth Wing. Iron Flame goes into a lot more information and you get to see more places. So I think that if you're interested in that, you want more information, go to the deep dive. So yeah, so she is starting to, so do you do this at all? Do you have like any mantras or anything you say when you're nervous?
Not particularly.
So one of the best things when I was learning to public speak was the chemical that you release for being nervous and excited is the same one. So instead I say like, oh, I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm excited. So I was relating to her because I'm like, sometimes your mind just needs to be distracted.
And her dad, she points it out. Her dad specifically says, your mind already knows the answer. So just calm down and let it remember.
Yes.
So he's saying like, take out the complications of it and just let your body do the work that it knows how to do.
And I think that that line will end up coming back. It's not nothing. It's not anything that right now that stuck out again as until I was reading it. I think that that's a good point that she knows mentally, this has been indoctrinated in her, all this information. And she is going to be able to come up with stuff I don't think she even realizes that she knows.
Right, exactly. Even from reading, just like she spent her entire life reading, she knows more about this challenge, these challenges she's facing than she realizes. Yeah, for sure.
So she's very fast on her feet. This comes up again. So again, I talked about the cadence of the book. As she's, if you listen to the audiobook, you can almost hear her like speeding up as she's reading. Like the cadence, the way it's written is as she's spouting out the facts is so good. And you even, again, she talks about like which foot is stronger because of the boot that she has changed. So thanks, Mira. So she's talking about this. And the reason she's getting so fast and running is because Jack is coming after her. So as Lauren said, he literally threw off people behind her. She's watching this happen. It's pouring rain that she finds comfort in. That is also mentioned in the chapter. We know for a fact her mom wields storms.
Yes.
But it doesn't say that's why she finds comfort in there.
Right. Yeah.
So I wondered if it was.
And exactly. And also another thing is I thought it was interesting that there's this huge storm because Violet even specifically says in the, I think it's in the first chapter, she was like, the weather has never been like this on Parapet Day. It's always been like really clear. And then now there's a storm. She was like, she didn't come out right out and say thanks to my mom.
Yes.
But part of me infers of that is like, maybe her mom is making it more challenging, either making it more challenging for Violet to prove herself more or to even get rid of other potential cadets.
Yeah. Or, I mean, this has not been discussed, so this is a theory, not a spoiler.
Yeah.
I wonder if her mom is nervous.
Yeah.
And it's just the emotion coming out of her for her signet. Yeah. My daughter's going through this. Yeah. But it didn't happen with Mira because it doesn't really happen.
Yeah, she said it doesn't happen like any other year in the Parapet.
But she finds comfort in it.
Yes.
So that's so.
Yeah, because she talks about growing up at Bisgayeth and it being lightning outside and she loved that. Yeah.
So she's watching this. So she starts speeding up. She's running. And very clearly, Jack is chasing her.
Yes.
It is not. There's no question if he's coming after her. He's.
And she slips at one point. And that's when she really notices Jack. Because she slips and she like catches her bearings. And she's like, I shouldn't look back. But I look back. And Jack is like sprinting towards her. And she's not far from the end. She's like, I don't know, 15 feet maybe from the end. And she's like, oh, snap. I have got to get a move on.
So she does make it to the end.
Yes.
And she jumps down off the parapet. So she jumps down. She is, and it talks about 10-foot walls. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about, I was trying to envision this in my brain. So we have a Rock City here in Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. And I was like picturing being in between stones.
Oh, yeah.
And just like how, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but just how surrounded that probably felt in the rain mm-hmm. and all of these walls. So she's jumped down. So she is officially a cadet.
Yes.
Which is a important fact because you have to get off the parapet to be a cadet.
Yes.
So as Jack is coming, as he's coming towards her, and there is someone there just lackadaisically like writing like names down, who I guess that they're probably pretty jaded.
Yeah. And they're probably used to this kind of like, whatever, just come on. They realize that people are excited to get off the parapet, but they're also like, all right, I got 25 more names I got to write down.
Yes.
Eventually. So,
so she jumps down and Jack is after her.
Mm-hmm. And she, so again, she's a cadet, which makes a huge difference in the codex specifically. And Jack lunges toward her and she immediately unsheathes one of her knives and forces it toward him into his nether region.
The nether regions, if you will.
And he stops because he's about to get
stabbed,
castrated.
Yes.
And he basically says, like, I'm going to kill you. And Violet says, you can't.
Yeah, she shouts out the codex. She said, hey, we're in, superior officers are here. This is a formation. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to do this.
Yes.
And Jack's kind of like, I don't care.
Yeah, Jack's like, yes, I can.
I'm going to tear your head off.
Yeah, exactly. And even the rider that's standing there says, no, she's right. She has the authority to kill you because you're not a cadet yet. But you cannot touch her because she is a cadet and that's against the codex.
So I think that we talked about Violet's character development mm-hmm. in this element of kindness. Mm-hmm. And this is, again, one of those mm-hmm. moments that you see. So she has this moment. This guy obviously has no sympathy for life. Mm-hmm. He has, he just threw off people he did not know. And you see Violet make the decision to not kill him.
Yeah, because they said, what is it going to be, Violet? Are you going to make him a eunuch or are you going to let him down? And she says, you promise you're not going to kill me right now, right this second. And he doesn't really say anything. And she just lets him go.
So I think that that shows, again, she has mm-hmm. this kind, she doesn't, it does not feel like Violet's going to have this brute mentality that mm-hmm. Jack does. He's going to be the murderer. She's going to be, again, saved by the word. So mm-hmm. she, knowing that codex. It saved her life.
Yeah.
So again, information, knowledge, pen is powerful. And I think that that is, I loved seeing this come mm-hmm. up again.
And I love that it's being intertwined so much. Like the words and her knowledge is being intertwined so much, even in, like you said, this brute mentality of people.
So the other thing that I was going to say, the full circle moment. Mm-hmm. So when she got on the bridge, she has to give her name. Mm-hmm. She says, yes, like that's me. I don't even know. This time when she says her name, she is confident. She says, yes, that Soaringo.
Yes.
And I think that that is such a unique, again, we think this is 20 minutes, not even 20 minutes of her life. Mm-hmm. You can tell, this is what I was going to say. You can tell she has changed from the first time she had to give her name to the second time she gave her name. She has changed. She is, I am a Soaringo. This is what's happening.
It is what it is and get over it.
Yes.
Here I am. And I'm a cadet now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that that is, I love that it got mirrored because mm-hmm. you see how much she changed.
Yes, I agree.
So the other thing that she says, I think it was her, when she was the writer's quadrant, they don't do trials, they just execute.
Oh, that's what they were talking about whenever the superior writers were talking to Jack. They said, if you try and execute her right now, we'll give you to the dragons because we don't give trials. We just execute you. So it's not even a question of if you're going to die. If you do this, you're going to die.
Which we have the dragons mentioned again. So mm-hmm. again, obviously dragons, huge mm-hmm. part of this book, but dragons are their saving grace.
Mm-hmm.
Dragons can be a death sentence.
Mm.
And I just, the dichotomy of that.
Yeah, I agree. And we don't know too much about dragons yet. So it's hard to touch base on it a ton, but it is interesting that you say that and how they bring it up every time that not only do we rely on dragons, but they do the murdering for us. They are the ones who are basically have a hold on us over everything.
It's this yin and yang. Yes. There always seems to be some kind of balance that they're putting in of this positive thing, features that you have. And then there is also, right, of course, some negatives.
Right.
So the last, the one thing I was going to point out about Jack before we start is it does talk about he has these glacial blue eyes, mm-hmm, but it says murder is etched in his glacial blue eyes. And I think it's very interesting. I'm going to compare this to when she looked at Zayden. Mm. So she has described now, like she's very much looking at people and talking about what they look like. But there was, the way she described Zayden was dark and hurt. Pain is kind of the way I kind of felt. Right. But like Jack, she's like, murder. Mm-hmm. He's going to kill me.
Yeah. He just, something about his eyes in general. And she, like you said, she's really big on eyes specifically. I've noticed that a lot too. And his was, they were 100% murder and they were icy blue.
Yes.
Like, almost gave her chills.
Kind of like a Malfoy or those really deep, dark, like blue. I see it in my head while we were talking about it.
Yeah.
So the last part of this chapter leaves us knowing exactly where the two of these people stand.
Love it. Jack, and the chapter ends with, "You're dead, Soringale, and I'm going to be the one that kills you." And that's what Jack says to Violet at the very end.
And I just think that we have been set up. So we got affirmed that Jack is the mean girl.
Jack is officially the mean girl.
Yes, he is not a girl's girl at all. When we don't stand for not girl's girl.
Exactly.
We need him to be a girl's girl. We'll see if he comes around. There is a lot still left to be discovered. It's 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
And I do think the next chapters pick up and cover a lot quicker, but this was development was needed to see the change that happened so quickly with her. And you see why, I think you kind of see why the parapet is so important, mm-hmm, to weed out not even just the weak people, but like there were a lot of decisions made,
right,
by each person, how they dressed, what they carried, who you got in line with, how you formed alliances, saved Rhee.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that showed us a lot about why the parapet is so important.
And also, they talk about it in the first chapter, but everything that they do in the Rider's Quadrant is not just to do it, right? There's a reason for everything. And one of the things specifically that they talk about, again, in the first chapter, was the parapet is done not only for all those things that you also just said, but also, can you walk across your dragon while there's storms wielding and while there's wind, and what are you wearing? And that's to be able to see, if are you even able to walk on your dragon if you get bonded?
I didn't think about the physical requirement.
Yeah.
And the last part of it was, it's callousing you to death.
Yes.
So you are watching your peers fall off, be thrown off, make decisions, and it's, the riders are going to face a lot of death, mm-hmm, and how you react in those situations is so important, because an overreaction could be the difference between you living or dying. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting. It doesn't tell us the history of how the parapet was created. Mm-hmm. And I am interested to see if that comes out later.
Yeah. Sorry. Another thing that just popped up in my head when you're talking about, again, what they were wearing and stuff. One thing that Violet mentioned when she was on the parapet, she said that, in specific to Jack and the people he was throwing off, was all these people with their rucksacks that were way too big and way too heavy. And that goes back again to Mira setting Violet up for success, because she had a rucksack that was twice her size that she couldn't actually carry. And these people, she's literally watching them fall off because they're not prepared for this. And it is, again, like weeding out the weak. And that's something that you have to know at the beginning of the Rider Squadron is, are you even good enough to get across here?
Which, it's interesting that they don't have like in the rules about this is what you should be doing.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, did these other people not have anyone they knew that went through? How did they pass on? Why is Mira's information special versus, mm-hmm, someone else? And I think a lot of it is that once riders are gone, they're kind of gone, like,
right,
we discussed,
yeah,
in chapter one.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting that it doesn't seem like many people were, I mean, Rhee obviously wasn't prepared.
Right.
Dylan wasn't prepared.
Yeah. And I don't think that they, because Rhee is not from Navarre. She's from a different city or province. And she just has always dreamed of being a rider. But I don't know how much information she actually has about the Rider's Quadrant. Because again, a lot of this history isn't given out to all of the continent. It's just word of mouth of what they've seen or heard through other people. So how can you get
prepared for something you don't even know
right
how to do.
Exactly.
Well, if you're loving the parapet, I will say you're going to have to check out our social media and see how at our book club we had to cross over the parapet. Lauren got to host that one and it was so cute. And we'll have to post how we had to cross. It was so cute. And we want you guys to host a book club with us so that you guys are having your friends get together and read this.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So we'll be jumping into the deep dive if you're interested in more about the provinces, the map. We're going to be comparing it a little bit to Iron Flame. That's what we're going to be going into the next episode.
So thank you guys again so much for listening. Make sure you like our podcast wherever you're listening to it and make sure you rate us and give us 5 stars. That helps us out a ton. Check us out on social media. We are at Scribe Squad Pod across all platforms. And if you have anything you want to talk to us about, send in any suggestions, please feel free to email us. Our email is scribesquadpod@gmail.com. We upload Mondays and Thursdays, 2 episodes a week, and we look forward to seeing you guys next time.